Are you looking to make a podcast? Well, if you haven't heard about Anchor, it's the easiest way to make a podcast. Let me explain. First off, it's free. Nothing is better than free. Am I right? Anchor provides creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcast right from your phone or computer. Anchor will distribute your podcast for you, so it can be heard on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and many more services. You can make money from your podcast with no minimum listenership, which is very refreshing for very fresh, new podcasts looking to get their start. It's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. Download the free Anchor app or go to anchor.fm to get started. Welcome back to the swamp, my friends. Today I'm going to be reading an interesting tale submitted by a very talented swamp dweller. This is a no-sleep style story, and I definitely liked it a lot when I read it, and I think you guys will too. If you have a story that you would like to share in a future video, be sure to submit it at swampdweller.net or the email you can find in the description down below. I would love to share your story with everyone here in the swamp. It's stories like yours that help keep this channel going. Be sure to hit that like button and to subscribe if you haven't yet, and sit down, relax, and enjoy this creepy story. Seven kids have gone missing in my town in the last 3 decades. I was a part of the search party for the seventh. This is our story. The child's parents had left him in the care of a neighbor while they ran to the gas station, and the neighbor, an elderly woman, could not keep up with the boy while they played. So she eventually sat to rest. The boy, not at all tired, wanted to keep up playing, but the old woman was exhausted and told him to wait until his parents returned. He asked if he could play with her husband, who lay in bed upstairs, but she said no, explaining to him that her husband was very tired due to his age, like she had become. As any 7-year-old would, the boy found this answer unacceptable and fled to the backyard, hoping to find something or someone to play with. He didn't return. The old woman, whose name was Margaret, had fallen asleep in her living room. She was stirred awake by the sound of the doorbell and shambled over to the front door, awaiting her there were the boy's parents, whom she greeted, and then remembered that she had been charged with looking after their son. The sudden remembrance, which dawned plainly on the woman's face, brought an immediate worry to the faces of the parents. And the trio began to call out for the boy. Their shouts fell on deaf ears, though. The boy was long gone. I was one of the volunteer searchers, and the particular group I had accompanied was tasked with searching the nearby woods. By the time people had gathered and the police had arrived, it was nearly nightfall, so some of us had to push through the trees and vegetation blindly. A surprising amount of people did not own flashlights. I was one such person. I did bring my father's emergency flare gun, which he thankfully never had to use during his boating days, normally inadvisable, considering I'd be surrounded by vegetation, but I figured it would be useful if my group discovered the boy, hopefully alive. I stumbled over roots, pushed through brambles which tore my shirt and cut my skin, and trampled flowers unidentifiable in the gloom. The moonlight shone dimly through the trees whose foliage had formed a natural ceiling over the woods. Eventually, unexpectedly, I became separate from my search group, lost amidst the unrecognizable flora. Panic crept into my mind, but I figured that with dozens of other people out searching for the boy, I was bound to come across someone. And pushing past panic was the hope that maybe the boy had stumbled through these parts of the woods as well, and I'd be the one to find him. Then, as if to assuage my fears and affirm my hopes, I saw a figure a few meters ahead, leaning against a tree. My heartbeat was faster when I saw that. He was not all that tall. About the size of a boy, even. I jogged towards him, but when I grew close enough to see his face, he ran off. I chased after, calling out the boy's name, Adam. It started to rain. I sloshed through the mud which had minutes ago been easily traversable ground. My progress hampered considerably. I could still see the boy ahead, but he grew smaller, fainter, and even though I tried to power through, I felt myself succumbing to the thickening mud. It became like a quicksand, restricting my entire body, resisting my most strenuous exertions. It was too late when I remembered that I was probably quickening my sink with my struggles. Seconds later, I was up to my chin. I'd apparently stumbled upon some deep depression in the earth. Forgetting the flare gun in my pocket, I tried calling out, but the rain fell loudly, drowning out my screams as I drowned in that sinkhole. Darkness rushed in, and all became black. I emerged elsewhere. The earth vomited me forth like a squelch, as if expelling something indigestible. The rain was gone here, and the environment was illuminated by several distinct rays of moonlight, as if this place were watched over by a trio of moons. The trees were different as well. They towered incredibly high, their tops piercing the gray cloudage above, as if rising to greet the triple lunar vanguards. Grass rose as tall as men in some places, while other areas were barren, some sunken in, others raised in mounds of dirt. I progressed forward from the position I'd arrived, hoping that if the boy had come here, I'd find him, and if not him, a way to escape. The hole from which I had arisen had smoothed over, leaving no signs of being impregnable. I eventually came across something resembling a path. At the start of this path, to my horror, was a massive coffin that towered nearly as tall as the great trees I'd seen earlier. The coffin's lid was open, and it gave off a strange, sinister impression. It seemed hungrily anticipatory, as if it awaited a soon-to-arrive occupant. I gave it a wide berth as I passed, and nothing sprung out of it to attack or draw me in. I came across other caskets, all of which seemed as they were built for titans. Trees, not as tall as the others but still massive in their own right, had grown through the caskets, throwing the lids off but obscuring any signs of the occupants, if there were any. Great boughs pierced through the frame of the casket, giving the trees the appearance of wearing polished wooden armor. As I progressed down the coffin-flanked path, the funerary housing became degraded, more noticeably withered by time, and the trees which grew through them became significantly more prominent, until, at the final tree, the only observable presence of the casket were its splinters which stuck in with what seemed like grim defiance to the trunk of the tree. This tree was as tall as the others I'd initially seen. Something about it, perhaps its age and disregard for the casket through which it had grown, saddened me. There was also a vague, unplaceable familiarity about the casket shards, as if I'd somehow seen them or inexplicably knew of their occupant before coming here. The path lined with casket-infused trees ended 7 in total, and opened to a massive swampish area. In the center of the mire was a massive pool, which over hovered a soft white mist. Despite the locale, I could hear no bugs or bog-inhabiting creatures, and the water surface was at a complete rest. I approached the pool, drawn into it by some unreal force and my own fixation by its mesmeric surface. Without consciously doing so, I'd walk right into the pool, and only until the water shifted did I notice. The water, which had been a placid and translucent green, turned dark and violent, churning viciously, rocking my body helplessly to and fro. The white mist changed to a dismal red, and suddenly felt like a great encumbrance on my body as I tried to hold my footing in the sloshing waves. Rain started to fall, making the pool's level rise until it was up to my chest. The coffins behind me, engorged by the mammoth trees, seemed to groan in agony as their burdens expanded to nightmarish proportions within them. splintering the wood of which they were made. Beneath me, I began to hear a voice calling from the depths of the pool, and peering in, I saw what looked like a boy. My instinctual desire to extricate myself from the pool was overridden by my desire to save the child, so I plunged downward into the murk. I reached him, surprisingly. I grabbed the boy, who, to my short-lived joy, resembled Adam. I had found him, somehow trapped in this abysmal place. I held him to me with one arm and used the other to propel myself upward, all the while fighting the monstrous currents which battered me underwater as much as they did above it. When the realization that I wouldn't reach the surface before my lungs burst came to me, I found myself crying, not for my own life, but for the boy who I couldn't save. Somehow, the tears felt warm against my body, as if they clung to my face instead of getting mixed within the Stygian waters around me. In a last moment of consciousness, I withdrew the flare gun from my pocket and extended my arm as far as it would go, kicking my legs to hopefully stay close to the surface for the gun to fire properly. I wasn't sure if it was gonna work, honestly, but it was all that I had, and thankfully, my finger pulled the trigger seconds after consciousness fully left me, and we sank downward into the abyssal depth. I awoke in a hospital bed, with a nurse attending to me. She smiled and said she'd go get the doctor. When they returned, they were accompanied by another woman. She looked familiar, but I couldn't place her, either due to the drugs assuredly pumped into my system, or my own wariness at the half-remembered ordeal. Together, the doctor and woman informed me of what had happened. My absence from the search party had pretty much gone unnoticed until they'd given up for the night, and a sort of roll call was conducted to make sure everyone got back safely. When I hadn't made myself present, the people resumed their search, this time for me, which the woman admitted to being happy about, because she was Adam's mother and hadn't wanted to give up looking for him. Rather than splitting up again and risking more being lost, they surged through the trees together, collectively sweeping through the endarkened wood. At some point, perhaps an hour into the search, a flare shot exploded into the sky. Due to the downpour and the thick, visually obstructing treetops, they could only partially trace the path of the flare. They searched the areas from which they suspected it had been fired, but found nothing. Tired and drenched, talk of returning to their home started up, and some started to make their way back to the neighborhood. Before the last had gone, the woman, Adam's mother, heard crying. She approached the sound and found me holding her son in my arms, wailing, the flare gun at my side. Around us, washed up from a shallow grave, were other children. Adam was the only one alive among them. I was insensate, totally unresponsive, crying dumbly. Adam was unconscious, but not seriously harmed. We were both taken to the hospital, and I was placated to quietness along the way. When Adam awoke, he told the authorities that the old man, husband of Margaret, had taken him, hurt him, and left him among the others in a shallow pit, which he'd first uncovered to place Adam inside, then afterwards resealed. The rain had washed away the recently piled soil, which had not had time to harden and become overgrown, as had happened since the last time such an atrocity was committed. The old man was arrested, and after a few hours of questioning, admitted to being responsible for the 7 missing children in the last 30 years. Adam, fully recuperated and wanted to thank me, he was brought in and rushed to my bedside. He hugged me, thanked me relentlessly, and his mother did as well. The doctor informed me that I'd be fine and can return home in the evening. They all left, letting me rest. I was happy to see Adam alive and well, but something troubled me. I realized that while he was the boy I'd seen in the water, he definitely was not the one who led me to the place where I'd fallen into the sinkhole. Later, once I returned home, I looked at pictures of the missing children. After scrolling through the pictures, I finally came across the first missing child, who had gone missing in the late 80s. Even though I hadn't got a good look at the child who led me to that sinkhole, I knew that this is the one. I also knew, somehow, that the last casket I'd come across in that extra-mundane realm, the one obliterated by the tree, had been his. thanks for listening to this creepy and downright unexplainable story from the woods. This one was written by a very talented author by the username of Weird Bryce Guy. I really enjoyed this story when I stumbled upon it and was very glad that they allowed me to share this with you. Definitely show them some love. You can find more of their stories in the description down below. What are your thoughts on the story? What do you think caused that seemingly odd parallel to another world? Do you think that the guy that was taking these kids and killing them was doing some sort of sacrificial thing, or do you think that maybe they just stumbled upon something at the right time? If you enjoyed this story, please hit that like button as it helps me out a ton. If you're new to the channel, why not join us? Hit that subscribe button and turn on notifications to never miss a new video, as I upload them almost every single day, and all things natural and supernatural. If you have a story that you would like to share in a future video, be sure to submit that at swampdweller.net or the email you can find in the description down below. I would love to share your story with everyone here in the swamp. It's stories like yours that help keep this channel going. If you're not aware, you can download your favorite Swamp Dweller scary stories on just about every podcast provider, such as iTunes, Spotify, Podbean, Stitcher Radio, and so much more. Thank you guys, as always, for supporting the Swamp. If you made it all the way to the end, today's code word is blanket camera. Be sure to comment that down below to confuse anybody who didn't make it to the end, and also to let me know that you made it. I love seeing how unique you guys get with your comments. I'll see you guys soon with another creepy video.